Okay, thank you. Good morning, afternoon, or evening, everybody. This is Steve Metallitz, and welcome to the RAA Sub-Team B call. Perhaps we could have a roll call if the staff could let us know who's on the phone.
Certainly, Steve. This is Glenn.
Hi, Glenn.
We have on the call Cheryl Langdon-Orr, Holly Reich, Tatiana Kramskowski, Steve Metallitz, Michele Nilon, Mike Rodenbach, Mark Trachtenberg, and for staff, we have Margie Milam, Liz Gaster, Heidi Aldrich, and David Geiser, and Glenda Sangeri, myself. Thank you, Steve. Over to you.
Thank you very much. Now, I understand that our guest, Bobby Flame, will be arriving a few minutes later. And that's the first item listed on our agenda. And then the second item listed, he's going to be presenting on this law enforcement list of recommended RAA amendments and responding to questions, because there were some questions on our last call. Then our second agenda item is the review of the consolidated list, and as I understand, it has just been circulated. So when we get to that point, maybe we can get that document up on the screen, but I think it just arrived. I got it about 1 minute ago. So that's the next item we have listed on the agenda.
Steve, would you like to pull it up right now and walk you through briefly what we have?
Before we do that, let me just see if there are any other agenda items that we want to include. I know Holly had sent around a very detailed set of reactions to the to the earlier version of the list. And Holly, I don't know if you wanted to walk through that or have any discussion on those. I don't think there was any discussion online about those.
No, I don't think so. Why don't we just wait until we get through the two agenda items that are already listed?
Okay.
Well, hi, it's Bobby Flame. I'm here.
Hi, Bobby. Welcome.
How are you?
Steve Metallitz, and we've got a number of other members of our sub-team here.
Okay.
So Holly, we'll just make that item 2B, if you will.
That's fine.
And then... I think with Bobby here, we can get started on agenda item number one. Are there any other agenda items that anybody wanted to add? If not, then we'll go to number one. Bobby, as you know, we've been looking on this sub-team at a consolidated list of topics for possible amendment to the RAA. And there were some questions that arose during our last discussion about some of those that were drawn from your document, which is now up on the screen in the Adobe Connect room, so we can all see the law enforcement recommendations.
Okay.
It might be if you – I guess one way to do this would be for you to simply walk through this document – and then people can ask questions as they arise, or if there are any other if there are particular questions that people on the call have right now, we could move around the document. But since we have the document up there for those who are on in the Adobe Connect room, and Bobby, I don't know if you have it in front of you.
I have my document in front of me. I don't have it on the Adobe Connect room.
Okay.
But I have my document in front of me. I have the short version, and then the long version, which you have both. And I think what you did on your list was you took out parts from the long version,
mm-hmm.
and broke it up into the different subject matters. I don't have that in front of me, but I have read it and
okay.
seen it.
Right.
So what I have in front of me is the original document that I gave you at the ICANN meeting in Seoul.
Okay.
So if you want me to go through that, the long version, step by step, I can certainly do that.
Yeah, unless people have another suggestion about how to proceed, I think that makes sense to go through this detailed version document, and then I think people could just raise questions as we go along if there's something that you have in there that they don't understand or have a question about, that'd probably be the best way to proceed.
Okay.
So why don't you, the ball's, I'll pass the baton to you, and why don't you start in on this document.
Okay, sure. Just so you know the genesis, obviously we've been, we've started to come together as a law enforcement group, principally the United States, Great Britain, Australia, New Zealand, but we've also worked with a lot of other law enforcement agencies from Spain, from France, from Korea, Japan, and we wanted to come up with a document where we would be a part of the process, certainly within GAC and also within the GNSO and also within this working group. So we kind of drafted things based on what was already out there, and some things we added are original to ourselves. So some of this document is actually things that came from the anti-phishing working group. Some came from ICANN documents, the SAC abuse document, and that all the ideas that have been stolen per se have been documented or footnoted so that you know where they came from. Right now, as you can see, this has been supported by five different international law enforcement agencies, but it's also been supported by the G8 Cyber Working Group as well, and also it has been presented at Interpol, the Cyber Working Group there, and it has received support there. On the G8 level, they're actually seeking a ministerial approval letter or support letter for this that would go forward. So that's kind of a little bit of the background. Now, insofar as the document itself, I have one proposed amendments to the RAA. And you'll see that this document is actually broken into two. One is very specific to the RAA, and then the second portion really relates more to what ICANN can do insofar as going forward in their due diligence with registrars and registries. So I'll just focus on the first part of the document, which is the proposed amendments to the RAA. The first paragraph there is concerns proxy registrations and privacy services, which we as law enforcement, I know this is a very touchy issue, and even within law enforcement, we don't agree. From the United States perspective, we don't like them. It goes against what has been written in the JPA and the Affirmation of Commitments. But our British and European counterparts recognize the need for privacy. Obviously, the United States recognizes a need for privacy. But what we had done there is kind of an amalgamation of our two points of view, which is that the RAA shouldn't condone or explicitly mention proxy registration and proxy services, which they do. Now, insofar as proceeding that it's a fact of life, proxy and privacy registrations, we wanted to make sure that if registrars or any other companies offers that service, that they go through the same due diligence and accreditation process that ICANN either currently does or should do pursuant to the second part of this document going forward. Now, realizing that some of the registrars are already accredited and therefore it might be slightly redundant, but that should be clearly annotated that they are providing that services and that they are accredited. Let's see, registrants using proxy private service will be authentic, who is information immediately published. In other words, Part B, 1B, refers to if any of these privacy or proxy registrations are being used for criminal purposes or fraudulent purposes, then that information would automatically be published. I can go straight to two.
Well, before we go on, let me just see if there's any questions on point one dealing with proxy privacy registrations. Any questions?
Just a comment.
I'm sorry. Who wanted to be? Who asked for recognition?
Holly Race.
Holly. Anybody else?
McKaylee.
Anybody else?
Mark.
Polly, why don't you go first?
Just a comment from that was from the last meeting, which is an additional suggestion appears to have been that proxy only be available for individuals and not companies. Had this been considered by the law enforcement agencies?
Yes, and I think it's actually in there.
Okay.
That, and I was told by one American that that is more of a European view, but I would agree with that. Again, we're going to have some differences of opinion, but I would agree that if we're looking to protect the privacy of individuals, and some others have mentioned the privacy of certain human rights groups, which is certainly a valid point, that they should be the only ones that are granted proxy or privacy registration if we are going to base it on the privacy principles.
Okay, that would raise more issues about how you determine what's a human rights organization, et cetera. But look, I'll leave that discussion.
I agree.
I'll leave that discussion.
I'm not saying I support that. I'm just saying that that's something that's out there. I think it would be more logical or rational that, you know, if we're talking about the privacy of the individual, then that would be something that should be explored. Another question, obviously, that's going to be raised is how do you ascertain who is an actual private individual not engaging in commercial activity? And that's, you know, something that needs to be answered, and how that would be accomplished is obviously another detail that needs to be worked out.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Michaela?
Yeah, Bobby, the question I had is in relation to the privacy and who is and all that, what is law enforcement's feelings on the way DocTel has implemented it, where a private individual can opt out of who is, and law enforcement do have access to the data through a proper channel with the registry?
Well, that's a double-edged sword, because obviously what we are trying to do as law enforcement is to make sure that we can combat criminality as fast as possible and prevent it. Now, what happens that, and this has been spoken about a lot of times, the CRISP, IRIS protocols have been mentioned where we'd have tiered access, and on its face, in theory, law enforcement supports that. But the question becomes is who's law enforcement? The United States has 22,000 law enforcement agencies. Who's going to have access to that? Now, insofar as the Telnic issue, that's a British company. And although the British law enforcement may have easy access to that, how does international law enforcement have access to that, which is a huge problem? So in theory, things of that nature law enforcement would like, but in practice, it really doesn't work, because once you have it where you're just giving it to just law enforcement or even a national law enforcement, it may be good, but then it relies on personal relationships. It relies on very structured organizations and the right people. And as we know on the Internet, things are constantly changing. People are moving in and out, so it makes it difficult. The other problem that we have for law enforcement is that if you only grant law enforcement access to certain who is and privacy databases, it excludes a lot of the other industries in which we work. Intellectual property, the banking industry is a huge one, and if they don't have access to that, where they can do their own investigations, internal investigations, and do civil litigation and civil investigations, then that means they're going to come to us with all of that work, and to be honest with you, we simply don't have the manpower for that. So although in theory some of this sounds good and we support it from a very selfish reason that anyone wants to give law enforcement access to, you know, private who is, in the long run we don't know if it's actually beneficial.
Well, just one follow-up comment, Bobby. I mean, if I was going to register a domain name in order to commit a serious crime, do you honestly believe that I'm going to provide valid whois details?
No, absolutely not. I mean, not if you have half a brain. And that's why the other part of this document is incumbent that we actually make some type of honest effort to validate that data in the first place. Now, I know a lot of people are going to scream about that how is it going to be done? It's going to cost money. And those are all valid points. But the point is that it has to be done, because we're seeing that a lot of criminality in the open who is, and also proxy and private who is, it's not just the open who is occurring through bad registration, phishing, farming, fast flux, child pornography, botnets, you name it. is being occurred through this, and we need to take more preventative measures as opposed to reactive measures. So I totally agree with that statement, but we have to start somewhere, and you know, that's why I'm glad we're engaging in this discussion to see how we can proceed further.
Okay. Mark, I think, was next in the queue.
Right. I have some questions about 1A and B, and I'll start with A. I'm just kind of wondering how from a practical perspective, you know, A might actually work where registrars would accept privacy or proxy registrations only from ICANN-accredited proxy registration services. While, of course, you have nothing in principle against, you know, the accreditation of proxy registration services, you know, how would the registrar ever know whether it was a proxy or privacy registration service? Because anybody can, you know, register a domain name, any person or company, and then, you know, license out that domain name to another person. So, I mean, would you contemplate prohibiting any licensing of domain names, or, I mean, how would that work?
You know, that's an excellent question, because there's always back doors to everything that you put in place, and that is a one huge back door where there's a lot of intellectual property people, there's a lot of lawyers that actually are de facto proxies for their clients and for their companies. So that's an issue that also needs to be explored, and to be honest with you, law enforcement hasn't explored that yet, and it needs to be explored. Whether you ban it so that an agent cannot set up a domain name for a client, you know, I don't know. I don't have an answer for that, but it is a legitimate question and point that needs to be looked at and is not addressed in here, but I think at some point it will have to be.
Right. I mean, I just can't see from a practical perspective how it could possibly be workable. But I mean, that aside, I guess, for B, you know, I have several questions. I guess, you know, the first question is that you start by saying registrants using a privacy or proxy registration service will have authentic WHOIS information immediately published by the registrar when the registrar is found to be violating terms of service, including but not limited to use of false data, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, how would the registrar have access to that WHOIS information if it's registered through a proxy service? Are you contemplating that the proxy would have to also provide the beneficial owner's WHOIS information to the registrar when registering it, or would the registrar have to request it from the proxy service, and then why would the proxy service give it to them? I'm not sure how that would work. And then, you know, my kind of second related question is, you know, one of the circumstances that would trigger the immediate disclosure is when the registrant is found to use false data. I don't know how that would ever apply, because the registration is done through a proxy.
Right. No, I think the theory behind this one is that we don't want people hiding under proxies that are engaged in that particular activity. Now, obviously, your points are well taken, and how that would work insofar as how is that information reported to the registrar, what type of information will they have, and, you know, from the law enforcement perspective and even my, you know, FBI perspective, it would be that, yes, they would have to report that information, and there might have to be some structural changes on how that is reported so that if we do run into this situation, you will have the right data, you know, being published. But that being said, if you're a criminal, obviously, even if you're using proxy information, it's going to be fraudulent information. So
right.
I think you
run into the same problem you have with A, which is, so let's say you create a system where the registrars have to have access to this other information as well. So that means that in every situation, they have to identify A when a proxy is used.
Right.
And then B, they have to build into their entire system a whole other database of additional contact information that's stored, which from both perspectives seems kind of unworkable.
Well, I mean, I certainly take your point, but like I said, I think we have to start making some steps to tackle the problem, because I think it's becoming a global, a very big problem. I know that I have spoken to all my field office, and it is a truly growing problem and becoming a true menace.
I mean, I cannot agree with you more about the magnitude of the problem, and we definitely encounter it on an everyday basis. And so I would love to find a way to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm. This is our principles. This is what we want to do, and that's why we want to work with industry. We don't want to take a sledgehammer to a very delicate problem. That's why we're putting these things out there. What we need to to do, but there has to be some solutions. And, you know, are we going to get everything we want? I'm sure that we will not. But we have to start somewhere, and we have to start putting things in place, and we have to realize that there's going to be a cost, and some people are going to be uncomfortable. And I think the bottom line is that we're probably going to have to either go to ICANN, that they're going to have to absorb the cost as part of their due diligence and how they want to run a safe and secure internet, or it's going to automatically have to be passed across the board to all the customers who want to have a domain name. You know, if you want safe and secure things, you know, there's going to be a price to them. So, I mean, I totally understand everyone's point, but we have to do something.
Let me just see if there are any other questions about 1A or 1B.
Steve, do you mind if I just come back to Mark on one thing there, please?
Yeah, go ahead, Michaela.
I'm a little bit confused. My understanding is that most registrars, now, obviously I cannot speak for all registrars, but any registrar that I've had ever had any dealings with is collecting the real data, as in the data that, to the best of their knowledge, is factual and correct with regard to the contact details of the registrant, and that the registrant opts in to a WHOIS privacy service.
Right, but Michaela, that's only in a situation where the privacy service is being operated by the registrar. There's a proliferation of third-party, you know, proxy and privacy services which are not operated by the registrar, and even the registrars are increasingly divesting themselves of those businesses.
Okay, well then that's where we would need to come in and make sure that there's a marrying of those two in some way, that we're not going to have third-party proxy services or proxy companies that are offering these services and are going off into left field, and we're not marrying that data to make sure that it's all being ascertained. So,
right, and again, I mean, I think the problem is, like, I just can't see, while I would find that incredibly desirable, I don't see any practical way that could really be accomplished unless you were to completely prohibit, you know, the licensing of domain names to third parties, or prohibit the registration of a domain name by anybody except the user.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of other ways to approach it. We're not negotiating a contract provision here.
Right.
Let me just see if Michaela has made his point or has finished his question. And
I think I'll take this up with Mark directly, I think, because I'm just looking for some clarification from Mark. Mark, you've got my contact details anyway, so if you could ping me, I'd appreciate it.
Sure.
Okay, are there if there are no other questions on 1A and B, I'm sure there are others because there's a lot to talk about there, and a number of other suggestions have been made along the way.
She has her hand up, Steve.
Pardon me?
I had my hand up because I think some of this we tried to tackle from the staff proposal viewpoint, and one of the things that we thought of was although you perhaps can't cover all accreditation, all proxy services, if you do link them to the ones that are offered by a registrar or made available by a registrar, you certainly pick up a larger amount that could be affected by the policy. So we recognize the concern that thought that even if you make a step in that direction, it's better than, you know, than no step, I guess, and at least that picks up, you know, a fair amount of proxy services. So I was just commenting on that.
I'll just add to that, since we're getting into the different proposals here, the IPC proposal was that something like this would apply whenever a proxy or private registration service was offered in connection with registration. So whether it was operated by the registrar or spun off to somebody else, if it was operated at the time of registration, it would cover, and it wouldn't affect the downstream licensing necessarily. I'm sorry I missed that hand. Margie Milam, too, didn't have her hand up, but Margie Milam did, so I missed that. Anybody else? Okay, if not, why don't we move on to item two. Bobby?
Okay, item two is very simple. If registrars are aware or should be aware, then language should be added to the effect, and this is going directly to 5.3.2.1, that we don't want registrars, if they know or they should know, And when we say know or should know, obviously it's something that is just so obvious, where someone is either have it reported to them or they're getting complaints or something is very askew, then that should be, you know, also part of that paragraph.
Okay. Any questions? Number three?
All accredited registrars must submit to ICANN accurate and verifiable domain. Yes, we just, in light of S-domains and some other registrar problems, and also in light of the fact that there's the potential for new registries and registrars out there with the new GTLD process, we just want to make sure that everyone is a legitimate business with a real, honest-to-goodness address where they can be located, where they can be served with legal process if need be, no matter where they are in the world, and that we know exactly what the structure is at, so there's no shady business.
And I will just say that there's several other proposals kind of along this line in the compendium that that Margie's put together.
Okay. And I think, I don't know if you, but I think 3, 4, 5 are kind of all together insofar as we're addressing transparency, that we just want to make sure everyone involved as a registry and registrar are legitimate businesses and business people with no criminal records. You know, we have the right people running these registrars and registries, and they've been vetted out. Or that's the second part, but basically that there's a transparency as to who is in charge and where these registrars are.
Okay, great. Are there any questions on 3, 4, and 5 that people have?
Yeah, this is Danny.
Danny? Anybody else?
McKaylee?
Anybody else? Okay, Danny?
Tim?
Okay, Tim? Welcome.
Tim, yeah.
Danny, McKaylee, Tim. Let's start on that cue. Danny?
Okay, thanks. With regard to 3, 4, and 5 collectively, I would tend to think that in view of the fact that ICANN currently has the registrar accreditation applications, they could post them. They could make the non-confidential sections of each application transparent and published, and that would pretty much take care of 3, 4, and 5 at a shot.
Okay. Bobby, any response to that? Or
no, that sounds fine to me. No matter how they get it, it's okay. And, yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Michaela, did you have a question?
It wasn't a question. It was just more a simple comment. I mean, that I have absolutely no issue with 3, 4, and 5. I think it would actually be helpful from a registrar perspective as well. Because technically, some of the problems we have as registrars are related to the issues in 3, 4, and 5. So I don't think I can't see there being any issues with those.
Okay, great. Tim? Tim, did you have a question?
Yeah, I guess, just a comment, actually, similar to what's already been said, that perhaps a lot of that, I mean, there might be aspects that need to find its way into an RAA, but I think a lot of it has to do with the accreditation process itself that ICANN does, and maybe some of that needs to be shored up a little bit or something additional done there. And then that information could be available from ICANN itself. So I think the majority of it is probably being done or available. Anything major that needs to change really probably needs to change in the accreditation process itself.
Yes, I would agree with that, and that's what we try to address in the second part of this document, which doesn't necessarily go to the RAA, but goes to ICANN's due diligence in vetting out registrars and registries.
Okay.
Right, exactly. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. If there aren't any further questions on 3, 4, and 5, why don't we move on, Bobby, to number 6?
Sure. Number 6 is almost a follow-up. We just want to make sure that there's no inappropriate activity with registrars and registries insofar as financially or criminally or civilly, just to make sure that they're good, solid companies that will be able to actually do their job and not be interfered internally or externally with any criminal allegations, criminal charges, bankruptcy, so on and so forth, civil actions. So that's what number six is.
Okay. Any questions on number six?
Yes, Michaeli again.
Michaeli, anybody else? Go ahead.
I don't have any issue with A, B, C, D, and E. I can see those as being perfectly understandable. I do have an issue with F. I have a very large issue with F.
Okay. What is it?
Well, a civil action, any company that has more than a couple of hundred clients is probably going to be sued at some point for some reason or other. Whether that civil action is
legitimate
or not is neither here nor there. And even if it is legitimate, the legitimacy of the civil action could be simply something like, let's say, for argument's sake, the UPS man tripped and fell on the stairs coming up to my office, which led to them taking a civil action to sue us for damages and loss of earnings. I honestly don't see how on earth that has any impact whatsoever on the stability of the DNS or law enforcement.
I agree with you. Okay, that's something that we will consider taking out, especially where we say where it should be on a registrar website, because obviously that is, I agree with you, it is not pertinent. I think that we may want to tweak the language so that if there are any legal and civil actions that pertain to the business of doing DNS, that at least ICANN is aware of it. But I would agree with you that any and all legal and civil actions should, number one, certainly not be posted, but not necessarily need to be reported. But I think there should be something in there that if there is a legal and civil action that pertains to them doing business as a registrar and doing DNS functions and registrations and so on, I think there should be some way to capture that information and at least have it available to ICANN at the very least, so that they have.
I won't disagree with you there. I've absolutely no problem if it's narrowed down to those functions that are directly related to what we're talking about here, because otherwise, I mean, come on.
No, I agree. I absolutely agree. That's like I said, this isn't an ironclad document. It's still a work in progress. So, no, that is an excellent point, and I've marked that down.
Okay. Anything else? Any other questions on six? Okay. Bobby, you want to move on to seven?
Sure.
This
kind of, I guess, is along the lines with three, four, and five. Maybe even I think we're still along the same vein here insofar as that we just want to make sure that registrars and registries are true businesses that have been truly certified as a business in their country of origin.
Any questions there?
Michaeli again.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I seem to have a lot of questions. I apologize. Well, actually, no, I don't. in the document, you have country of operation, which caused a linguistic difficulty for me.
Okay.
Because by our very nature, registrars operate across borders.
Okay. Well, where they're incorporated, I think. And if it's multiple countries, then they would need to put that. I know that everyone is engaged in transnational business. So if you have better language, that would make it more clear and succinct. I'm open to that.
Well, I mean, I think if you just swapped operation for origin,
okay,
I'd leave you be. I wouldn't have anything further on that. I mean, if you wanted to expand it to include and any subsidiary offices or anything like that, fine.
Okay.
But does country of operation suggest to me that if I sell a .com to a registrant in Canada, then I automatically have to have some kind of legal entity in Canada and any other country in which I sell domains into, which would basically put me and most of my colleagues in industry out of business.
Okay. Okay. So I totally get it. Maybe we'll make it a little bit more specific and tweak out some of that language.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Great. Number eight, which I think is a new topic.
Yes, number eight deals with third-party beneficiaries, resellers. We realize in a lot of countries outside of the United States and Europe and some of the more Western countries that resellers is a big issue. But I think since they are part of the chain, since they are part of the, you know, the food chain, they need to be included. And we need to make sure that they are held and accountable to all of the provisions that registrars and registrars are, so that they cannot go off into left field. And I think that's what number eight is, to make sure that they are included and that they are abiding by all the contractual, legal, technical, all the obligations that are mandated by registrars. So I think they've kind of been out there, and I think it's time that we pull them in and make sure that they are complying with everything everyone else is supposed to comply with.
Okay, I see a question from Kim, one from Michaela. Does anybody else want to get in the queue with questions on item eight? Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, I think, first, I think some of this is covered in the new RAA. Perhaps, you know, there might be additional provisions that you're looking for. But I think my biggest concern is about the last sentence about all resellers and third-party beneficiaries should be listed and reported to ICANN. First, I'm concerned about what you mean by third-party beneficiary, and then the fact that, you know, there are hundreds of thousands, probably, resellers around the world for registrars and registries, and I'm just concerned about what ICANN would have to do to try to manage and track that, especially given that, for the most part, you know, the largest percentage of cases, resellers will be compliant, there aren't issues, and for those small number of issues, it seems more that those are dealt with as they come up rather than ICANN trying to somehow keep a database or keep track of tens of thousands or likely hundreds of thousands of reseller entities around the world. I think that's a pretty tall order that's going to be almost impossible to manage.
Bobby, any response? Or?
I understand the concern. I really do, but I think I'm just going to have to disagree in the fact that there has to be some mechanism or some reporting mechanism so that we know who they are and they can be tracked. If these are people who are engaged in registering domain names and are part of where this information comes in and how it can be tracked, then they need to be accountable, or at least someone needs to know who they are. Now, if there are hundreds and thousands of them, then maybe there needs to be less. Maybe there needs to be more stringent requirements on who actually becomes a reseller so that that number can go down. I don't think everyone should be qualified as a reseller just because they want to be. So I understand what Tim is saying, and I understand that it could be a problem, but I still think that it needs to be addressed and that we need to have these resellers brought in. Insofar as the third-party beneficiaries, that's a catch-all in case anyone is being left out of the food chain. But I really think that, you know, resellers have become a problem insofar as when either they go under or they disappear or they're not recording information properly. We need to be able to track down who they are, and if they are a problem, they need to be, addressed accordingly.
Okay.
But I think making registrars responsible, you know, that's one thing. I think the rest of that's pretty difficult. You get into, you know, limiting competition, and I just think it's going to be difficult for when this is actually we try to negotiate this. I think you need to consider it's going to be difficult to probably come to any kind of agreement on some of those issues, but just my feeling. I can't see registrars in general agreeing to that as stated.
Michaela?
I'd echo absolutely everything that Tim said. And I'd also throw this at you, Bobby. The problem with, even if pigs flew and you somehow managed to persuade people to actually sign off on something like that, the problem would simply just move sideways, because ultimately all that would happen there then is that people would just register domains to themselves and not declare that they were actually reselling them. I mean, it'd be absolutely impossible to police. Whereas you'd stand a much better chance of achieving your goals if you would enforce the RAA on the registrars, because ultimately any reseller of GTLDs is doing so through a registrar. So if you enforce the provisions of the RAA on those registrars, then ultimately you'll have the same thing, because under the new RAA, it is stated categorically that we as registrars are responsible for our resellers.
Okay.
I just do not honestly see how you could even think about doing something as broad as this, because the situation arises that you're going to end up in a world of pain deciding, you know, what exactly is a reseller and what isn't a reseller. If I register a domain for my friend down the road, does that make me a reseller? If I register 5 domains, am I a reseller? Is it 50? Is it 100? You know, where do you draw the line?
Okay.
So I see that as terribly problematic, where I think to achieve your end goal, you would be better off focusing on enforcing provisions of the RAA on those of us who are actually party to it directly.
Okay. No, that's good. Those are valid points, because I think for us, the whole point of this exercise is the end game, which is to prevent criminality from the very beginning and to be able to react to it appropriately when it does occur. So if the proper place is with the registrars and dealing directly with the registrars to make sure that that's where everything needs to occur, then that is fine by us. We have no dog in the race insofar as going after any particular party, any particular company. We just want to make sure that things are very uniform, they're very equitable, and we know how to, like I said, prevent it before it even occurs. But if it does occur, exactly who do we have to go to, and how quickly and accurately can we get the information that we need? So those are valid points, and, you know, if that's how, you know, you and the industry feel it is going to work best, then we will defer to you. But just know that that's, you know, what our end game is.
Do you mind if I just come back in here? I fully understand where this is coming from. I can understand the sentiment, and I just think that the problem is best addressed by enforcing the RAA on the registrars, not trying to cast this massive net out, because ultimately, if you do that, you know, the bigger the net gets, the more fish get through. So, you know.
Okay. Okay. No, good point.
Okay. Let's if we can, let's move on to item 9 and 10 about the data that the registrar is required to collect and maintain and validate.
Right. Okay. Well, I know this is going to be a contentious issue, because I know a lot of the registrars and whoever else will collect this information, I know it's going to be certainly an issue. And we got a lot of this information based on the recommendations of the anti-phishing working group. There was a lot of things that were taken out of what they actually had recommended based on some conversations with some registrars and a lot of registries as simply unworkable. What was in that original document, they were not feasible. So we tried to keep it to what we thought was the most feasible aspects of what is collected and how it's validated, or not how it's validated, but what's validated. And in a nutshell, we just want to make sure that whenever anyone, company, whatever, registers a domain name, that you are dealing with the person who says you are dealing with. Now, is that going to be 100%? Absolutely not. Is it going to be an easy process? Absolutely not. Is it going to be a free process? Absolutely not. But we need to start somewhere. This needs to be done. And we also recognize that there's also a lot of registrars who actually are currently doing that. So this is to set a bottom line, a standard practice, so that we can try to prevent and eliminate a lot of the fraud that's already currently going on. So that's why you're going to see the different categories. I'm not going to go through each and every one of them, but just so you see what they are and what the premises or the rationale is behind them. So if you have any questions, comments, tomatoes.
Okay, and so taking together 9 and 10, I guess, is it correct? 9 is what needs to be collected.
Correct.
And maintained. 10 is what would need to be validated.
Correct.
And I think you pointed out that's drawn from the best practices recommendations for registrars from the anti-phishing working group.
Right, drawn and edited down.
Okay. Questions or comments on 9 or 10?
Me again.
Michaela, anybody else?
Yeah, Tim as well.
Tim, anybody else?
Danny?
Okay, go ahead, Michaela.
I think that there might be some disagreement on the exact kind of wish list of data that is collected, but I don't have any issue with the spirit of it, for the simple reason that, as Bobby probably knows and is very aware of, the Visa, MasterCard, and the others are tightening up a lot on the PCI side of things for anybody who does cardholder not present transactions, which would basically be most registrars. So, most of the larger registrars, we would be PCI compliant anyway, because we'd have to be because of what we do. I think there might be a certain degree of disagreement in with regard to the technical HTTP data and everything else that is collected. It also doesn't state for how long you want to hold the data, which is another problem. The general kind of thrust of what you're trying to achieve in those sections, I don't really have any issue with, because ultimately every time I get a charge back, it causes me a headache. So I don't have any problems with it.
Okay. No, and I agree. I mean, there's certainly, work in progress in some of these things. Some of the specifics can certainly be tweaked out and need to be tweaked out.
Okay, Tim?
I just had a question in regards to 10.1A. IP addresses used to register domain names, and what was intended there as far as validating that. Maybe not how, but what's the end game, I guess, in doing that?
Right. Well, part of it is, as you know, we are well aware that IP addresses, if you really truly want to validate them, there is no true way to validate them, because you can have an IP address from a company, a legitimate company, that says they're in Boston, but really the server where they're operating from is Los Angeles. So that is duly considered. But what we are trying to do is eliminate the most obvious frauds. Those are legitimate. The illegitimates obviously can use proxy servers and hack into sites and go from there. So that, again, being considered. But some of the things that possibly could be done, when I say validate an IP address, not validate it in a vacuum, but validate it insofar as you're matching it with a physical address, a telephone number, a time zone, things of that nature. So, again, maybe work on the specifics. It's just one thing to look at insofar as validating the data, with the realization that it is not perfect, and people can certainly circumvent a true IP address from where they're coming from.
Okay, thank you. Danny, I think you were next.
Thank you, Bobby. I just had a question regarding the time frame for the data retention.
Do your European counterparts have any particular views on that that we need to be aware of?
You know, they have not come to me with anything. I know that they have data retention laws. I believe it's for 1 year. The United States, I believe, doesn't have any, but I think there's something, the REA, 3 months. Is that correct? I don't know. Okay. But no, we have not discussed that, and that's, you know, something that that certainly should be discussed and put in there.
Thank you.
Michaela, go ahead.
I'm very, very familiar with the entire data retention thing, because we're members of EuroISPA, and I've been involved for the last year and a half in the data retention working group here in Ireland, so I know that stuff a bit too well. The data retention legislation was introduced at a European level and is then being transposed into national law within the 27 member states of the European Union. Each member state has a certain degree of leeway in how it is transposed into law. But one of the key things is that a lot of personally identifiable information has to be removed, and most of the data retention actually refers to email, not HTTP traffic. So in many respects, it's not really what you're looking for.
Okay. Tatiana had her hand up, I believe.
Yes, I have one question regarding credit card billing address. The matter of fact for example, in Russia, credit cards are not a verification document, and registrars don't recollect data for credit cards. We have only passport data. So how can we apply this proposal for our system?
I'm sorry, I just had a little trouble hearing. Can you repeat that? Or?
Yes, I can repeat. The matter of fact that, for example, in Russia, credit cards are not a document for verification. So registrars can't recollect data for credit cards of clients.
Okay.
How can we apply this proposal for our system?
Okay, so you're saying that credit card information in Russia isn't validated? Did I understand correctly? Okay.
Yes, we have only passport data.
Okay. Well, then how would someone buy a registrar or a domain name in Russia?
By wire transfer.
Oh, wire transfer.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know what? That's something that we did not consider. So how would we validate that? Then I guess that's a good question. We would have to figure out how to do that, how we would validate wire transfers, if that's what's being done.
Okay. Of course, we are trying to provide some services by paying by, for example, systems like PayPal, where our clients can put their data of cards. But we can't recollect as a rule. So we are trying, but it isn't. We have only, I think, 15% of payments by cards only for domain name registration.
I'm sorry, what was that percentage?
About 15%.
15, 1.5, okay. Okay, no, that's very good. We have we've been working through the G8 with the Russian police, and they are part of the G8, and they're actually going to support this. So that is something that we can go back to them with and figure out how to validate in that, you know, in Russia.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We're almost out of time here, so let me ask that we move on to items 11 and 12, which I think are the last two in this part of, really in the RAA amendments part of your document.
Okay. Well, 11 was just taken straight from, as you see, the SACS 38 recommendation. so that there's just an identifiable an abuse contact that is listed. Should anyone have any problems? So that's what 11 is.
Any questions on 11? Okay, why don't you go ahead to 12 then?
Okay, 12 is ICANN should require a registrar to have a service level agreement for their port 43 bulk who is servers. And that's, just a way to make sure we have better information.
So the issue is that too often those servers may not be available.
So, right.
Even though that's an RIA requirement to provide who is via.
Right, exactly.
All right. Any questions on number 12? Okay. In that case, unless there are any other general questions or final questions for Bobby, I know you have the rest of your document is on due diligence, and I think it's fairly straightforward. It really deals with the accreditation process rather than the RAA itself.
Correct.
Obviously, some of these things are also coming up in the discussion on new GTLDs in terms of due diligence on registries.
Okay.
Unless there are further questions for Bobby, I'd certainly like to thank you for taking the time to walk through this and to be on the spot for the entire meeting and responding to the questions. I think it's been very useful in terms of identifying some areas where there may be problems and issues that need to be explored further, and others where there seem to be some level of comfort with dealing with these or at least identifying these as good topics for RAA amendments.
So, no, I agree. I agree, and thank you for allowing me to go through this. And I think all the comments and questions were extremely useful.
Okay, great. Well, thanks very much, Bobby. Let me just ask, in terms of the group, we are now at the end of our hour. We could ask, as I had mentioned right at the beginning of the hour, Margie has circulated a new compilation document on all the topics that have been proposed, and none of us have had a chance to review that. But Margie, did you have anything you wanted to say about that in terms of what people should be looking for as they review that over the next week or so?
Yeah, sure. I'll just give you some background, and I'll pull it up right now. Basically, all I did was take the list. And try to consolidate it into topics. And so I rearranged the topics into categories. And there's about, I don't know, there's about 20 or 18 topics altogether. So really, that's all. I didn't do any substantive editing other than adding a little more clarity on what the issue was. And so I think you guys should take a look at it. I did add, Danny made a suggestion this week as an additional topic, and I included that. But really, you guys look at it and see if there's anything else you want to add, but that's all I did.
Okay, thank you, Margie. Let me encourage everybody to look at that, and if they have concerns or questions, maybe circulate those on the list. And thanks, Margie, for updating this. This is really our basic working document here, because it brings together all of the suggestions, law enforcement, from the IPC, from Danny, from all the sources that weighed in. Are there any questions about that? The last agenda item that we have here was the comments that Holly sent around, I think, on Monday. Yes. Holly, is there anything you wanted to I'm sorry we don't really have time to go through these today. Is there anything you wanted to say to orient people in terms of responding on the list?
Just a few things. I think the first issue I raised was a lot of this relies on compliance, and I keep hearing, well, if this is enforced or if this is enforced. So we're looking at provisions, but I think it's a point that both Doug and Danny raised. We also should be looking at whether the provisions are actually going to make a difference or whether bad actors are always going to go outside, which I think we all believe anyway. There's a lot in the new RAA agreement that necessarily hasn't come into force yet or is just coming into force on resellers. So I'm wondering if we take another look at whether that's actually working or not. There's a lot on proxy servers, obviously. This is going to take another whole discussion. And then there are some other issues that were raised by Danny and others that actually are just new and big, like cyber squatting. What is it, you know, what's the definition? It's going to take a long discussion. So I sort of broke down what the last conference was about, and I think at some point we're going to have a discussion on compliance, what's in the RAA now on compliance, because if we are going to put in a whole new range of topics at some point, is it going to make a difference, and how is it going to make a difference in behavior? And maybe it never will, because I'm reading on the side, bad actors always go outside anyway.
Okay, comments on Holly's statement? This is Steve. I'll put myself in the queue just briefly. I think you've raised some very good points here. I think in terms of compliance, we do have to make sure that, you know, whatever goes in the new RAA has to be enforceable. So enforceability is certainly a very legitimate topic for our job, I think. I would say that the fact that some of these problems could also be addressed in part by improved enforcement of the existing RAA, I think we have, this is not an either-or proposition. We certainly have to be, at least from my point of view, we have to be improving enforcement of the existing RAA in parallel with you know, better, clearer provisions. And I think that's really consistent with what the staff, including the compliance staff, has put forward in the staff notes. That it's not either or. It's not, you know, it's not a question of why adding to the provisions of the RAA if the existing ones are not being enforced. I think we have to do both of those things, from my perspective, and I think from the staff perspective too. Any other comments? I think we want to come back to this, some of these issues, in our next meeting, I'm sure. Any other comments at this point? If not, and I know some people have had to jump off the call because we are over our hour, why don't we wrap it up here? We will get a doodle out shortly for our next call, which will include a review of some more of Holly's points and of the document that Margie circulated earlier today. Unless there's any last comments that people want to make, I just want to again thank Bobby for his time and thank everybody for their questions. And please watch for a doodle for our next meeting within the next 2 weeks. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.